Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which is at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
So we're not going there.
Let's go ahead and go there. Tell the audience I'm suffering from the flu, but we're going to get through this show and have a good time doing it. So,
well, anyway. sorry to hear you're not feeling well, but you sound great. So,
that's
consolation fun at all.
Okay, I appreciate it. We've got a good show tonight, don't we?
Well, we've got a really fun show. We've got a terrific guest and a great topic. And you know what I think we'll do is we got all this preliminary stuff we like to do at the beginning, but let's not leave a brother hanging. Let's just bring out our guest. He is a writer, a video producer, and social media entrepreneur focused on the human side of accelerating change. He's worked extensively in reality and documentary television, co-founded future portal memebox.com, and he serves on the board of the Acceleration Studies Foundation. He blogs about the present-day human creativity explosion, which he sees as an autocatalytic component of broader acceleration and near-time social change at socialnode.com. He's currently based in balmy Mountain View, California, as well as snowy Elka Park, New York. Alvis Bridges, welcome back to Fast Forward Radio.
Hi, guys. Hi, Phil. Hi, Steve. Your voice does sound remarkably well for one so ill.
Thank you.
You know, Alvis, we were just talking before the actual broadcast started. I think it's probably been a year or more since we've had you on, so I feel like we've got a little bit of catching up to do. I mentioned a couple interesting things in the intro, but what's new and current with you? What catch us up here on the life of Alvis since the last time we spoke?
Sure, guys. Like all good entrepreneurial futurists, I'm a rolling stone, and the last year has brought me through some very interesting projects, and currently my focus is on a stealth mobile project that I guess I can reveal the name. We're calling Crowdcast right now. I'm not going to get too much further into it, but it's mixing content together with some gaming components. It seems like a very hot topic, and I'm very excited about what's happening there. Working with a bunch of great programmers and designers out of the New York area, and that's what brings me over to New York right now. And then something I can talk a little bit more about is another project that I'm launching on Kickstarter next week with a blogger friend of mine, old Memebox colleague, Vanessa Miemis. We're going to be doing an open source forecasting project called The Future of Facebook, and what we'll be doing is getting together the smartest people we know, and you guys included if you're up for it, to answer questions about the future of Facebook, and according to the steep futures methodology, so that we get a very comprehensive set of analysis, cutting together videos, and then also releasing a bunch of the quotes, the individual pieces, straight to YouTube. So something like, one main video, five sub-videos, and then hundreds of little pieces, and we'll be plugging that and actively working on that. We've got some awesome people lined up, Kevin Kelly, John Smart, Nova Spivak, Om Malik, I always have trouble pronouncing that one, and a few other choice brains. So
that sounds really interesting. Where will that be available? Where would we look for that project showing up?
So we're going to announce on Kickstarter next week. So there'll be a video of Vanessa and I talking about the project, and we're going to be looking to raise a base of $2,500 to do the video editing and the production of that, and some really cool infographics that we've already started work on. And then that should be available. Our tentative release date is January the 24th. So sometime at the end of January, we'll have our first big Future of Facebook video out, and it'll all consist of web-based, you know, webcam interviews with folks all over the place.
But you heard it here first.
You did.
Wow. Here first.
Another Fast Forward Radio exclusive. We've scooped the big guys once again. That's cool. That sounds like a really neat project. I'm looking forward to seeing that. It sounds like you got some great people lined up, and I'm already formulating my ideas about the future of Facebook. Since we're going there now, I can tell you that I think it's going to be one of two things, okay? Or something in between these two. Here, now I've covered all. Sally said last week in the chat room that these people who give scenarios are weaseling out. So that's what I like. Give enough scenarios, right, and you cover everything. So either, I think, talking about the future of Facebook is like somebody 15 years ago talking about the future of AOL, right? Ooh, America Online. What's going to be like 15, 20 years from now? Or, you know, in the future, Facebook just pretty much owns the entire world, right?
Well, right. You just saved me a lot of work, so.
Yeah.
So,
or something in between there.
How's that for investment advice? That's, it's all, it's nothing, or it's something in between.
Exactly. I think I should give investment advice. Well, you know, Stephen, maybe as a lawyer, right, I'm sure you dole out some wisdom once in a while, right? You got to kind of, you know, cover your
bases. Exactly. Yeah, it could be this. It could be that. Here is all the things that could possibly happen, and you make your decision on that, on the basis of the advice I've given. Yeah.
There you go. And good luck. Right?
You always let the client make the decision.
I think it's high time. It's high time for a speculist, hedge fund.
Yeah, I think so. We got to get some people to put some money into that. Well, we'll get to that. I do have a pitch that I want to make to the listening audience, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But before I do, I have a bit of a personal announcement to make. Stephen, I probably should have told you about this offline, but we're just actually at the point where we're telling people, so I want the Fast Forward Radio listening audience to know that Soraya and I are expecting.
All right.
Tremendous.
Man.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Now I give the shocking part. We're not having a baby.
Okay.
Oh. Well,
explain.
What could it be?
We're having two babies.
You're having two babies.
Two babies.
You guys are awesome.
Congratulations.
That's great.
So there it is. That's my prediction for May of 2011 is that I'm going to be somewhat frazzled, very happy, and completely exhausted.
That's great, man. That's great.
that's what I see. That's what I see coming up in the near future.
For a second there, I thought, you mentioned Stephen's name in there, too. I thought that maybe you guys were having some sort of a baby or a brainchild baby, but twins, that's tremendous. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Actually, of course, Stephen and I, Fast Forward Radio and The Speculist are kind of our brain children, and we are giving birth to the next generation there coming up in we don't have an official start date for it, but we know it's running into early February when it begins, because I've got a couple of key guests that we're lining up for the World Transform 2, which is actually coming up in February. So thanks for that segue, Alvis. You actually made it easy for me to plug our upcoming show. I imagine probably the first show. Why don't we? You know what? We should nail this down now, Stephen. The first World Transform 2 will be the last week of January. How does that sound? That seems right, doesn't it?
Sounds great. Let's go ahead and do it. But we got to start lining up guests now. It's not too early to get the word out. We had some such good quality guests last time that I think our audience would be a little bit let down if we let up. So we need to go ahead and ask Alvis. Alvis, you going to be there for this series here in about a month or so?
Absolutely. At that point, I envision myself, on the Future of Facebook Media Tour, so I'll be plugging my product, and I couldn't imagine a better forum for that.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, yeah, we might we'll talk offline. We might make the future of Facebook. We'll just tie that right into one of the topics that we'll be covering, because you know the slight change of gears that we're doing with the World Transform 2 is that we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about how these transformations affect us as individuals. And I think that all the issues around individual empowerment and the connections that people are able to make with each other through social media and the skills that they're gathering, I think there's a real fit with a lot of the stuff you talk about and what we're going to be getting into. So we look forward to having you on that, having you be a part of that.
Tremendous. I'm honored.
Okay, now before we get into the actual show, we're closing in, I swear, on the actual show. But one more quick announcement. I'm sorry, Stephen, did you have anything that you wanted to do by way of housekeeping before we got going this evening?
I don't guess so. I've got several stories I'd like to cover, but they're all part of what we're going to be talking about. So
okay, I had to drop my bombshell, so I didn't mean to. Didn't mean to preempt, you know, anything interesting you had going on, but
absolutely nothing. I have nothing like twins coming next year, so I'm good.
Okay, all right. Well, do keep us posted if that changes, because you know, we want to know.
Yeah.
But this is my request. I have a favor to ask of our listeners, and that is this: if you enjoy the show, or even if you have some long nurtured criticisms of the show, if you have some constructive criticism of the show, if you have any kind of response at all to the show, please go to our page on iTunes and write a review of Fast Forward Radio. We have one review up there currently, and I see the guy's point, particularly if he's listened to some of the early shows, or if he's listening to, you know, we've been rebroadcasting shows from the archives from 2 or 3 years ago, and he's not pleased with the sound quality, and we have had sound quality issues definitely in the past. I think we do much better with that now than we have in the past, particularly around differentials in volume, although that's very hard for us to do anything about because we're phoning into the Blog Talk Radio software, so we only have so much control over that. But I think we're doing a lot better with that now. Although it's valid that the criticism is there, so I'm fine with the fact that the criticism is there. I'd just like to see some more, I don't know, substantive comments on the show, good or bad. You know, if you've got constructive criticism, that's fine. If you've got nice things to say, we do appreciate those. But it would be nice to see another, you know, 3 or 4 reviews up there that maybe capture more of the je ne sais quoi. I don't know, you know, what we're about, rather than just griping about the sound quality. So. As a holiday gift to me, if anyone wants to go write a review for us on iTunes and just let me know it's there, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's jump into our program. This is fun. We've been writing on this topic generally for the better part of the past year. I mean, it's something we've touched on throughout the history of The Speculist, but we had an interesting series of shows earlier this year in the spring, in which Cory Doctorow and Martin Ford joined us, and we talked about how automation and technological acceleration are leading us to this new kind of economy, and we talked about different scenarios for what that new economy might look like. And then, what was it, a week ago, I guess, Alvis, you wrote a piece kind of laying out where you think things are going. It was a great post on your blog. I actually described it as somewhere between a blog post and a manifesto. I felt like you might have, you know, one more cup of coffee and you might have given us a book, actually, on this subject once you warmed to your subject. Why don't you talk us through what that's about? Because that's really reignited some interest in this on our end, and I know that that our readers have really shown some interest in this as well. So what is it that you see as happening currently, and where do you think things are headed?
Well, you know, it's my general foray into this topic, you know, comes about due to, you know, our current economic climate. You know, I'm interested in the future. I'm interested especially in the social side of accelerating change, but I'm also very interested in the now. And I think that we're approaching a time now where people are finally receptive to the message of accelerating change and all the disruption and all the amazing things that can happen due to it because of the creative destruction that we're living through. So I think that, you know, to kind of paint the broader picture, I think we're living through a period of unprecedented accelerating change that is accompanied by what I believe to be an unprecedented period of creative destruction for of human social destruction. I think that the United States has dug itself into a very deep hole. I think largely we've been bailed out of a punctuated crisis by the productivity that has been driven by the dot-com boom and other software companies. And I think that's kind of bailed us out for a while. I think things could have gotten messier a lot sooner had these new technologies not arisen. But now we keep, you know, we keep overextending ourselves and it's seemingly pushing ourselves to the point of a, you know, international, you know, currency crisis or a job loss crisis or, you know, just, you know, insert crisis X here. Something's going to happen because our system has become so brittle and we're over-reliant on old models for our productivity. You know, so I like to point to a new class of companies, companies exemplified by the likes of Google and Facebook and Groupon as potential saviors in this situation, while at the same time they're also cannibalizing other jobs. So basically I see a poor economic situation, disruption coming at us in all sorts of forms, a very likely period of a very likely bad period of a few years, and then finally, you know, emerging from the ashes of that, you know, a new prosumer information driven knowledge economy, you know, that folks like Toffler have been talking about for a long time. But it, you know, just to me, I guess the main story point is that the transition looks like it's going to be very messy.
I think that's a really interesting point. The question being how much pain are we going to experience in the transition? I've noted that once you start talking about this, there is a lot of disagreement as to what's going to happen next, and even where we're going to end up. I actually took the original blog post that I wrote in response to your post, and I had also linked. I see Will Brown's in the chat room. Will had also written some additional thoughts on this, which I highly recommend everyone read both Elvis and Will's posts on this subject. I took these scenarios that we had come up with after the Martin Ford show, where we said, well, it's going to be, you know, we're going to end up with one of the following, right? The world's going to be one of the following things, and I actually expanded that a bit because I think that there's probably as we get a clearer idea of how these factors are interacting with each other, I think we get more clarity on what the potential options might be. So I actually wrote it up in this survey that I ran earlier this week. I think I 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 choices. And here's what I said. You know, which of the following do you think is going to happen in the near term, and which is going to happen in the long term? And so here are the choices: a largely stagnant economy, not too unlike what we've seen over the past decade; a huge welfare state, wherein the government pays us all to keep consuming, and this is actually Martin Ford's model; a booming corporate economy in which the vast majority of us work completely made up and meaningless jobs, which the companies all support just to keep consumer activity alive. That's my scenario. A massive depression in which rampant automation kills the majority of jobs and destroys the economy in the process. This is one we hear a lot. A maker economy, I've got the word maker in quotes, in which we eke out a living through micro-business opportunities online and actually producing our own stuff. And this is drawn largely from our conversation with Cory Doctorow. And then finally, from your essay, a super prosumer economy in which automation enables massive empowerment and enrichment of the workforce through our own creativity and initiative. So those were the choices I gave. And when I look at the results of the survey, well, first off, I always give everyone on the show an opportunity. What do you think, Stephen, for the near term, the next couple of decades? I assume you've taken the survey. What sounds most likely to you?
Unfortunately, I'm leaning towards a massive depression for the near term.
Whoa.
Yep.
On fast forward radio?
Well, I'm long term. I'm an optimist.
You're allowed to actually. You're allowed to give any answer you want. I'm just okay, but for long term, you land us where?
More towards the maker economy.
Okay, what do you think, Alvis, of those choices, if they sound accurate to you?
Sure. I mean, I think in the super short term, and I'm talking, you know, 1 to 5 or 8 years, now maybe through 2020 or before that, I think we're going to go from a stagnant economy to a welfare state to a massive depression pretty quickly. And then I think that we're going to see the new life forms of the super prosumer and the maker economy at the same time start to emerge. So I think the story is very muddled. You know, I can't possibly choose one of those even for the next 10 years. I mean, we're living in the knee of the curve, and my model in my head that I'm running is that creative destruction accompanies accelerating change. And so I think we could have pockets of amazing growth, amazing stories, and I think that by and large the world is, in the United States especially, is going to decline further into depression.
Wow. But long term.
How's that for positivism?
Long term.
Well, unfortunately, I'm right there with that's kind of the way I'm seeing it, too.
Well, that's interesting. You guys, although there is no majority, the plurality for the near term predicted a stagnant economy, not the massive depression. Actually, that was one of the least chosen of all the answers for the near term. The stagnant was the number one, with a nice kind of spread amongst welfare state and even the maker economy and the super prosumer economy showing up in the near term via some of our perhaps more starry-eyed and optimistic readers. Now, when you switch that over to the long term, you see a clear preference for the maker economy and the super prosumer economy. That's where everyone seems to think things are going to go. No one seems to think we're going to have a massive depression for the long term. That was actually that's the number seven answer. That one came at the very bottom. A few other people chose other, and some of the others showed up. But the basic scattering of the answers actually goes very well with what you're saying, Alvis. Confusion, right? No real clarity on where things are going to go in the near term, but a feeling that in the long term we'll head into those new emerging economies. Now, to me, that's interesting. One, that people aren't really clear at all at what's going to happen in the near term, and even in the long term, it's not completely clear because there's a certain amount of, is it going to be the maker? Is it going to be the prosumer? We're not sure. Is it going to be other? But I had two true or false questions on there, and I'm fascinated by how those broke down. So I'll give those. I'll start with you this time, Alvis. True or false? Things will get a lot worse before they get better.
True.
Okay. True or false? In the end, things will get a lot better than most people now imagine.
True. And with the caveat that a lot of it will be very unexpected and very confusing.
Okay.
To the contemporary human brain.
Well, part of the one of the dynamics that we talk about all the time on this program is just the fact that we really have it good in this day and age compared to past ages doesn't mean we necessarily think we have it all that great. So in even the fairly near future, things can be awesome, But people won't think, hey, we live in an awesome time. They'll think, hey, we live in a very confusing and troubled time, because that seems to be the that's our fate as humans, right, is to not be certain about what's going to happen next, and to kind of take the good stuff for granted, and to focus on how we can improve things, which means focusing on problems. Stephen, what do you think? True or false? Things will get a lot worse before they get better? I think I know your answer to that one. True.
True.
And then true or false, in the end, things will get a lot better than most people now imagine.
I hate to, completely echo our guest, but yeah, true. It's, these things tend to sneak up on us. A lot of things are happening right below the surface, and how it used to be technologies would roll out and they'd slowly be adopted over the course of two or three decades. We adopted the cell phone, within just a few years, and no one knew what Facebook was a couple of years ago, or YouTube, or blogs, or any of these things. And now they're so huge. Podcasting basically, Phil, that was 2005, things roll out very quickly and are adopted very quickly, and so we have the opportunity. We're going to have some huge challenges, but our ability to respond to them is very, very quick. So hearing some background noise there, Phil, is that are you hearing me?
Yeah, sorry about that. I just had to go on mute just for a moment. I had a little technical glitch, which you caused earlier by saying that we weren't going to have any technical glitches this evening. So, I think we got through it okay. Actually, if that's our glitch, we've done quite well. Here's the interesting thing. I agree with both you guys. When you say you're echoing Alvis, you know what? What you guys gave were by far and away the winning answers to those questions. And this is where the process of running the survey, you surprise yourself sometimes. Because I figured the way I phrased those questions, they would be very challenging. And, I try to make them controversial. I'm not looking for a clear runaway winner when I phrase a question. So I thought if I said, well, things will get worse before they get better. True, absolutely, 100%, right? Everybody's going to say that. Right? So I said things will get a lot worse before they get better. And I thought, oh, that's going to temper it, and this will run about 50-50. No. It's about more than 2-1, well over 2-1 in favor of true on that one. And on the things will get a lot better than most people now imagine. Again, I thought if I put a lot in, that people would shy away from that. But no, once again, more than 3-1, people said yes. Things will get a lot better than most people now imagine. So, one thing that says to me is I never cease to be surprised by what our readers and listeners have to tell us, and that's one of the things that makes doing this so much fun. I'm truly, truly surprised that the answer came back true. A big majority came back true on both of those, even though those were the answers I would have given. I thought that would be a kind of a minority opinion. But here the three of us agree, and most of the people who read The Speculist and listen to Fast Forward Radio agree with exactly what we're saying. But let's not take anything as a certainty here. Let's talk about things getting worse before they get better. Alvis, we were talking about how quickly things can turn around, how quickly things can change. We had Alex Lightman on, it must have been 2-3 weeks ago, and he was talking about what he perceives to be a major missed opportunity for the U.S. economy around 4G. And he says that had certain steps been taken in the previous decade, that we would now be in the midst of a 4G-driven boom that would make the dot-com boom look like small potatoes in comparison. What do you think about that kind of analysis? Is it possible that we avert the things get a lot worse before they get better scenario just because acceleration accelerates faster than we think it's going to, and new things open up faster than we think they're going to, or is that just wishful thinking?
Well, no, I don't think it's wishful thinking. I mean, we can't say for certain what's going to happen in the future, right? But, you know, like a white swan could certainly take, you know, manifest in the form of, you know, unexpected, an unexpected prosumer model, you know, really making a deep impact everywhere, or you know, a new class of companies that just explode onto the scene thanks to, you know, the fundamental layer of Facebook and Twitter and Google that's been laid down on the web, you know, stuff that we just can't imagine and that's just developmentally inevitable. You know, that said, you know, when you look at the spread of possibilities and, you know, really look deeply at the system and look at history to guide us, you know, we can clearly see that a lot of the institutions and the way that we spend money and you know, the way that our democracy works is archaic, and it's, you know, it can be likened to an older body that is you know, slowly deteriorating. So, you know, I think that even though, you know, there is always the possibility of a silver bullet kind of magical future solution, I think that even, you know, for example, in the case of broadband, even if that had, you know, come online, I think that that wouldn't do enough in the near term to avert what's, you know, going to happen inevitably.
Alvis, could you kind of let our audience know what your idea of the prosumer economy looks like? How does that work?
Sure, sure. I mean, prosumer is a term that's been around since, I think, 1980, when Alvin Toffler coined it in the third wave. But, I mean, he and Marshall McLuhan and a bunch of others were talking about it for even longer than that. Prosumer means a blurring of the role of consumer and producer in the economy. You know, it means that rather than consuming stuff, you know, falling into the role of strictly being a consumer, that we as individuals can also contribute value back to the parent company and to the system that we're participating in. And I think, you know, prosumerism has, you know, started to take hold in the media space, certainly online. Social media is like the you know, most typical example of that. You know, at the same time, some of these futurists believed that we'd be much further along on the prosumer trajectory, on the prosumerification of everybody, and you know, on our journey to the knowledge economy. But it seems like it's going to be a much harder battle to bring the prosumer model into classic industrial areas.
I agree.
You know, one of the questions that I recall Michael Darling asked once when we were talking about this sometime quite a while back was, let's say that the prosumer model is essentially correct. Theoretically, it's correct. How do we know it'll work? That is to say, how do we know that it provides an actual economy that provides a living for everybody? Right. I guess that's the conundrum. It might provide things for all of us to do, but maybe there was never actually a guarantee that the amount of work there is to do would equal a living for everybody who wanted to make a living, and that the economy has just kind of worked out for us that way so far, and that in the future that's not necessarily something that you can count on being the case.
Well, I mean, that's the question. You know, I mean, I think that is a root question about our economy and what's going to go down in the next 5 or 10 years, is how quickly can prosumer models, you know, be perfected, and then how quickly can they spread to the masses, and then how quickly can they trickle into other industries? I mean, I think what we can do is we can look at what exists, you know, and my blog post on SocialNode was, an attempt to, do a, you know, somewhat of a thorough analysis on that. We look at what exists, you know, companies like Groupon, a lot of different app companies that rely on the wisdom of the crowds and on crowdsourcing for their power, you know, Facebook itself. And then we can imagine what these companies will look like in the future. And, you know, thank you, Accelerating Change, you know, this is not going to be a linear trajectory. I mean, we can already see that Groupon, for example, wouldn't have been possible. It was not developmentally possible before they could virally spread the word through Facebook and through other systems like that. you know, that was a necessary layer, and then bam, this big company exists. So what are the companies, you know, that are going to exist, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now, that could return value to us and could also start to return more value to us and to reinvigorate, you know, our industrial base and production. You know, I think that requires putting our thinking caps on and just going nuts with our imaginations. You know, I mean, I can envision a lot of supplementary jobs, like, you know, everyone participating in, you know, being a deputy police officer or on-the-fly taxi driver, you know, using your smartphone, and I'm around here. Hey, you want to pick up this delivery? You know, it's going to be cheapest for you to do that. You know, joining, you know, being an on-the-fly tour guide or on-the-fly advisor, like on bitwine.com. You know, a lot of these, you know, roles are already popping up as you know, possible thanks to a lot of new startup models. You know, but nothing revolutionary on the scale of Groupon or Facebook has taken hold yet. But I think that, you know, the deeper question is, are these jobs going to provide enough value to, you know, minimize the downturn, or, you know, help us get out of this super funk, which is, you know, I'd argue we're already in a depression based on our unemployment stats. I mean, what are, you know, how is this going to impact farming? How is this going to impact production? How is this going to impact the writing of code? And I think that once you start to put together a trajectory of these kind of micro prosumer models and then imagine the platform that's going to be supporting that, and you know, constantly imagining that that platform is going to be evolving, then I think, you know, I think you can imagine some scenarios in which we do make a bunch of money, and we do cause a lot of efficiency, and we do produce tangible things using the prosumer model, which I think will blur together with the maker model and with you know, games underlying it all. Now, so I guess that's, you know, to answer a short question with a lot of words, the way that I see that shaking out.
Okay, and we're going to come back to that before we close tonight. We're going to we'll each give our best guess or our best attempt at outlining a scenario for how we get to that happy abundant world that we've talked about so many times in the past. But let's talk a little bit before we get there about how we got to where we currently are. And there was an interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal today, an op-ed by Orson Scott Card. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was the title of it was "How Friend Became a Verb," and he's talking about exactly these transformations. He's talking about exactly the huge impact that social media is having on us. Obviously, friend became a verb because of Facebook. I'm pretty sure. One of the things he talks about leading up to that, I found quite interesting, was how all of his favorite stores are closing, and it's his fault that they're closing. Right? He talks about how he misses. He used to go to CompUSA. And he's really sad that they don't exist anymore, but then he hadn't bought a computer in an actual physical store for 15 years. So, you know, he's to blame, right? He talks about his Borders is closing down, but he orders all his books online via Amazon. He liked going to Borders and maybe having a cup of coffee and browsing books, but he didn't buy anything there, right? So we see this pattern of what we used to call the, you know, brick and mortar business model being replaced by e-commerce, being replaced by people doing things via the web, and this kind of path of destruction that it's created. Actually, one great example he gave was of a friend who owned a tropical fish business, selling aquariums and tanks and all the paraphernalia, and he finally gave up, he said, when it became clear that people could even get the fish online. Right. I mean, when you don't even have to go into a store to buy a fish, you just can't. You know, you simply can't compete anymore. Now we know the upside. The upside is that you don't have to have a specialty shop in your small town or in your remote area to get anything in the world you want. Right. All you need is an internet connection. The upside is this tremendous availability of things and tremendous really discounting that has occurred all through the process that we benefit from as consumers. The pain has been on the producer side. And Stephen, I think you had another good example of that.
Well, I wanted to give an anecdote of what Orson Scott Card was talking about. My wife and I were walking through the drugstore yesterday, and she saw a book that was on the display there, and said, "Hey, that looks like a good book. It was a collection of Christmas stories, and I forget even the author's name, but anyway." And so she was flipping through it and said, "Yeah, I think I'd like to get this. It'll put me in the holiday spirit, that kind of thing." And I, a couple of clicks later on my iPhone, I said, "Well, it's on your iPad. Check it out when you get home." and it was like $4 cheaper, you know. Right. And so that sort of thing, that's got to hit these brick and mortar stores real hard, you know. I don't see how they can really compete with that. And so, anyway, there's that. So.
That's the exact story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's multiply that by millions, and that's what's happening to brick and mortar stores. And it's I shared a video with you right before the show, Phil. It's really an amazing video.
Hey, Stephen, before you describe that video, I just want to point out that this is the discussion going on in the chat room right now, and Sally. To your comment that shipping work seems likely to last longer, at least until we have the nanotech assembler economy. Stephen, address that comment, please. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Well, I don't think we need nanotech to hit shipping. I think we can do 3D printing without nanotech, and 3D printers are right on the horizon. I mean, we are going to that's the next big thing, I would think. I would think that in the next 2 or 3 years, everybody will have a 3D printer on their desktop, and that seems like a remarkably short horizon. But I really believe that's coming very quickly.
I think so too. But to your point about the video, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off track there. I just thought that how long will shipping work actually last in light of that video?
Yeah. In light of the video. Okay. Here's the deal. Soap.com. And you might know them also as diaper.com. They got their start basically shipping diapers to new parents, Phil.
Diaper.com, I'll need to make a note of that.
Yeah, make a note. Apparently you'll be needing a few of those. They've really expanded themselves, and now they're soap.com. And they basically sell everything that your local Walgreens would sell, and shipping is free. UPS shipping is free. So basically, if you're on your computer or on your iPhone and you decide, hey, I need to replace my toothpaste, need some more shaving cream, need this, need that, as long as you don't need it this very minute, you'll probably will find that it's easier just to get on soap.com and have it shipped to you, and then it shows up on your doorstep a couple of days later. But the video, what is remarkable about the video, and I'm going to put a link in the chat room here in a second, is that it shows these robots in this warehouse moving. It's I call them shelf robots. They're moving these shelves around. It's like a dance inside this warehouse. It's incredible what the technology these people had. I had no idea that this even existed in the world, and just an incredible shipping operation that they have going
it
there.
It looks like a scene, even today, even in 2010, late 2010, it looks like a scene from a science fiction movie when you look at it. I look at that and go, is that special effects? Or is that really happening? And, of course, it really is. It's just amazing. Alvis, have you seen this? Do you know what we're talking about?
I haven't seen the video, but I can fully envision it. And it's amazing how quickly some of this stuff is coming online, whereas other areas of the economy are completely stagnant.
Well, it's the parts of the economy that are coming online are the ones that really are realizing these efficiencies. The guy in the video from soap.com actually talks about Walgreens and CVS stores and how they're able to, they always have everything in stock all the time, right? And you see these robots walking around, actually gliding around. It's very I don't know how to describe it, lyrical, just the way these machines move around, putting these orders together and preparing them for shipping without a human being in sight. You know, that's where the economy is going to be growing, where you're working that, unfortunately, human factor out of the equation. It reminds me a lot of a story that I heard from John Smart about, I can't remember who it was, someone's projection of the factory of the future. I'm sure you've heard that one, Alvis. The factory of the future, this was made back in the 60s, I think, will have a man and a dog. Now, the man's job is to feed the dog. Do you know what the dog's job is?
To keep the man company?
To make sure the man doesn't touch anything, right?
Huh.
So, you know, the
you know what's interesting about that whole model? Here's a question I'd like to throw it out, you know, right back to you guys.
Okay.
Like, those robots are amazing, but then imagine what human beings can do together with all those robots, right? Or together with the magic wands that are, you know, currently manifesting as cell phones in our hands. You know, imagine a whole human society augmented by the same stuff that, you know, the same, you know, fundamentally processes and intelligence and routines that, you know, can be applied in that type of manner. But imagine those applied to expanding our, you know, social networking opportunities, the way that we function, you know, making us smarter together as a large group. I often encounter this like polarization of future scenarios. You know, whereas some people think that AI and automation is just going to run rampant, and then on the other side, you know, like people counter with humans individually becoming very intelligent. But I think there's this huge unexplored or underexplored middle ground of human society itself undergoing a massive transition in order to become, you know, to behave in 5 or 10 years in a manner that will make us feel like, wow, how we're dancing like this, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I think that that's a great point about, in fact, one of the things I was thinking was, boy, what I wouldn't do with one of those robots. And to Stephen's point earlier about all of us having 3D printers on our desks, you know, you move down the road a couple, 3 years from now, and when the information revolution is now one of people producing stuff, actually producing goods, you know, that's a key part of the economy even today, and a key part of productivity is the ability to produce new things, to add value to that which exists, and also to create completely new things. Now, we can do that very easily in the world of information, the world of ideas, but now you add that component of we can actually produce things.
Externalize our imaginations, you know, more concretely. Yeah,
it seems to me that there's potential there that we probably don't have our heads very clearly around yet. We talk about the maker's world, and obviously we've talked many times about, you know, having the nano factory on your desk and being able to produce anything. But somewhere between here and there, I think there are very unexpected new developments, and I think that there are directions that the economy can take that that haven't crystallized in our minds yet, that we haven't seen yet, that can really do some amazing things. I think we will do amazing things, things that people haven't expected that they're going to be able to do. And if I were going to give, actually I'm jumping now to the end of the show, but if I were going to give my projection for how we get from here to that abundant world in the end, I would say that it's through that. It's through realization of production of physical goods added to our continually increased ability to add value to information products, and this growing amount of connection between all of us, this networking that started with telephones and went to email and went to the internet and went to Facebook, right? I mean, just this progression that we've seen of people becoming more and more interconnected with each other, and an amazing growth in what we're able to produce. I think those two things can combine to turn things around a lot faster than perhaps we fear things might get turned around.
Yeah, one would hope. I mean,
not to make a speech or anything.
I mean, hey, those are the times we're living through right now. You know, I mean, these are the issues we're wrestling with, and they're real, they're deep, they're meaningful. You know, we have the specter of Skynet staring us down. You know, automation losing all these jobs. You know, and then the idea, you know, on the other side that like some individuals could, you know, augment their intelligence and pair up with AIs and whatnot, and then, you know, so where does that leave the billions of, you know, of everyone else? You know, hopefully what's kind of, you know, emerging now is a clearer picture of mass social actualization, you know, the amplification of that which nature already, you know, made us, you know, and the next logical developmental steps of that as a planetary civilization.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Relax on that,
Stephen,
a little bit more.
Stephen, I know you had had a couple or three hot tweets today that you wanted to get to. Did we cover all those?
Well, let's see. I wanted to mention, basically, as part of this, certainly automation is going to be a huge part. And so some of the robots that we'll be seeing as part of this won't look like, you know, our imagination what a, you know, a sci-fi robot is. The robots that were moving those shelves around in that factory looked like Roombas, didn't they, with shelves on top of them. And then, you know, you can automate a McDonald's probably without a single humanoid robot. Everything's just moving from one conveyor belt to another. And then
I've always called that scenario, incidentally, the McCube scenario.
The McCube, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, the Japanese have this. They're working on a humanoid robot that can run, and it's spooky in the way that it runs. It has blades like an amputee for its feet and lower legs, and this thing can move. And you're talking about the Skynet scenario. There it is. You know, I would hate to have to move it to try to outrun this thing. You know. Hope for molten metal or something, or a compactor or something between me and it, because it would outrun me. I'll put that link in the show notes as well.
Maybe we can continue to wait out everyone in the Middle East for these things to come online finally. Maybe that's the grand strategy.
And there's another one here, France. Now, listen to the way this article starts about this robot that the French are working on. France is set to join the select club of countries that have developed advanced adult-sized humanoid robots. Now, what's that like to y'all? I mean, what other technologies do they...
Say again, Stephen? What other technologies do they work?
Yeah, what other technologies have been described in that fashion, that to say that a country is going to join a select group?
Oh, join the club.
Group,
well, nuclear weapons, right?
Nuclear weapons and space travel.
Right, right.
So they're basically, this particular article is putting the development of advanced humanoid adult-sized robots in that same category. I thought that was interesting, and I'll put that in the show notes as well.
That is interesting. But I tend to think that that running robot is going to be running to get you something, Stephen. It's going to be doing you a favor of some kind, quickly, right?
Well,
running, not chasing you. I for one look forward to our robot help friends. Okay, I won't even say overlords or robot buddies. Okay, well, we're running dangerously close on time, so let's wrap this with some parting thoughts. I gave my scenario for how we get out of this mess. Alvis, how about it? 100 words or less. What can we do to foreshorten the ugly time, or to get us to the good time quicker, do you think?
All right. First, it's understand the problem. You know, we need to understand globalization, accelerating change, network effects. What is economy truly? You know, when you reduce it, and also in the big scope of things. So number one is get a better map of the problem. Number two, identify growth areas, you know, and get better at futurism. You know, get better at developing scenarios, get better at prediction. You know, use some open source prediction models. You know, and create a map of the possible future, and then move towards the most desirable and most likely outcomes that we can actually affect. You know, and I think that's going to require, for sure, stuff like national broadband, a better understanding of the prosumer economy, moving towards more intelligent models of everything, and ultimately moving up the stack of abstraction, getting better, smarter, faster together.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Stephen, anything to add to that?
Not at all.
All right. Well, Aldous, right. Hey, how great having you on again. Let's not let it be so long. In fact, I'm penciling you in for early February. So we'll look forward to getting back together with you in the very near future.
Awesome. Thanks, Phil. It's always a pleasure to be on the show. I really enjoyed listening to it over the last year. The quality keeps getting better and better. I haven't noticed any audio problems at all. It's always
Thank
a good
you.
Time. And Stephen, I always love your perspective on everything. Keep up the good work, you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you
so much, Aldous. All right, Stephen, what do we got going on music-wise this evening?
The song is Sorbet Girl by Subplot A. Now, Subplot A is the same group that brought us Everyman a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's great.
We all enjoyed that. So I hope you guys enjoy Sorbet Girl.
I already love it. I love the name. Sorbet Girl.
I love the name, too. I have no idea what to expect. But
it should be good stuff. All right. Well, thanks for putting that together. Thanks once again to our guest, Aldous Bridges. Everyone in the chat room, what a great chat that went on tonight. And everyone listening live, thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We'll be back on with an archived World Transform show on Saturday, back on with the archive show on Monday, and on again live again next week. Hope you can join us for all those programs. And until next time, live to see it.
It got so serious, the two of us, every little thing.